Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now, and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
Imagine a man, he goes into someone's office. Maybe it's a dentist, maybe it's a friend that he's visiting, maybe it's his employer, maybe it's the office of an employee. Makes no difference, as you'll see. Then he sits down with the man across the table from him. And the man, in less than 3 minutes, says a series of words. And in an instant, the fellow that we're speaking of, he feels the world crumble beneath his feet. The color drains from his face. He knows that he's heard something that's true, that he doesn't know what to do about it, and that's his condition. That's the first thing I want you to imagine. Imagine a lady. She spent her life dreaming of a certain career, filled with aspirations to become someone or something special. Her life dedicated to that plan. And then, out of the clear blue sky, something happens and she loses, and then you fill in the blank. She loses whatever it is that she loses. Maybe she loses her health. Maybe she loses someone. Maybe she loses all of a sudden her interest in the whole plan she had because she sees through it. And in that moment, that woman sinks into the sofa, collapses in a chair, hands go to the face, and she begins to weep or worry or fear for what will become of her. That's image two. Image three. Here's a man, and he's basically compromised his entire existence for the purpose of keeping the woman in his life, whoever that may be, friend, family, or wife, from leaving him. Everything he thinks depends upon her and the relationship he has with her. And then one day, for reasons beyond his control, the whole thing falls apart. And in the moment that the whole thing falls apart, there he is, lying on the floor, metaphorically speaking, perhaps physically speaking, hating everything and everyone that's brought him to this condition that he blames on the person involved in his sudden sense of being victimized. Now, how many of you can see, without too much strain on your part, that something like that has happened at least once in your life, if not multiple times? Hands, please. We all agree that this kind of thing happens a lot. We can be in a restaurant. Have you ever been in a restaurant and had a waitress do something that absolutely, it was beyond? Have you ever had a beyond belief moment in a restaurant? And you sit there unable to eat the meal that's come to you because you've fumed or regretted or resented something or someone. What do moments like that all share in common? I'm asking you to look across the board. And those moments in our lives where a shock comes, where something that had we our druthers, the disturbance never would have taken place, but we didn't have our druthers, and there came the disturbance, and there inside of us suddenly comes this collapse, this sense of loss, this fear, this falling down. What do those moments all share in common with each other and with ourselves? Because this is a critical question. That, and you would think, wouldn't you, that when you've had as many of these moments as we have all had, because in some form or another, they can happen almost daily, 2, 3, 4, 5 times. Have you ever been talking to somebody and they just didn't answer you the way you wanted them to? And suddenly you find yourself snarling or trying to control them, and you find yourself wrapped up in some kind of rage for no reason at all, yes or no? What do moments like that over and over and over again tell us about our lives? Your own silent mind speaks volumes. And what every one of those events tells us is that we have spent our lives valuing the wrong things. Every fear, every grief, every resentment, every worry, every sharp sting of doubt, every stress, every one of those moments brought about through relationships with life and the people in them prove to the human being in an instant that he or she has been clinging to and cultivating that which has no real value. And how can I say that that human being has spent his or her life cultivating, clinging to, pursuing that which has no real value? Because in the moment when a human being needs it most of all, he or she has nothing to fall back on other than more of the same suffering that started them down the path when the shock came. That's all a person has. That's all you have. Period. When things don't go the way you want, when people don't speak to you as you think you should be spoken to, when your wife or your husband or your brother or your sister or someone in your business suddenly turns on you and shows you something unexpected about themselves and you suddenly find yourself enraged, where is what you need in that moment? And what we need and that we have yet to find is that in that moment we need to see beyond a doubt, that we are in that moment where he, she, they, them, it brings up inside of us what it does because we have valued that which has no real value. None. If we had what was valuable, then when a man is cruel, we wouldn't go into self-compromised thoughts and feelings about what to do with him or toward him or how to blame ourselves. We would not meet negative states with negative reactions if we had what was valuable. We would not meet unwanted moments with further unwanted feelings about them if we had what was valuable. We would not hate anyone regardless of what he or she did if we had what was valuable. And we wouldn't sink into self-loathing. We wouldn't fall into self-pity when life brings us the evidence of what cannot be changed if we had what was valuable. But we do not have what is valuable. Instead, we continue to prize what has no value because inside of us, in the moments where those powers that seem to be outside of us that collide with us and cause the confusion or the fear or the regret, that in those moments when that's taking place, there is an instantaneous switch that takes place inside of the human being where that moment comes where I've gained the world. and it's profited me nothing. And every person listening to this, to one degree or another, has gained the world. You have food, you have clothing, you have some money, you have friends, you have family. Every human being, and even those of you who say, God help you, that you don't have those things, you've still gained exactly what it is that you have set out for, which is a relationship with the world that either affirmed or denied what you said was valuable in your life. We have to understand what steals this moment where we see that the coin that we've been paid with by the world, the coin that we agreed to, the coin that we signed the agreement for, whether in deed or just by will, that the coin that we have agreed to take in exchange for our lives is worthless. Because it is. It's absolutely worthless. And in those moments where life stings, stings, in those moments where something suddenly sinks beneath you, where someone says something to you, and you're on fire, or you're filled with fear or pain, that every one of those moments is the proof that nothing that you have come to possess in exchange for the coin of this world, which we'll talk about in a moment, that not one of those coins is worth a thing. Because if it was worth something, then you would not be reduced in that moment by reality to someone who knows no other recourse than to turn on yourself or turn on what you say has caused you to be tormented. It is the coin that we have accepted that has made us ugly human beings. An ugly human being is a human being who believes that he or she can continue to work in the same way for the same pay, the same coin, when it didn't work out the first time. And then each subsequent time that the coin isn't valued in the moment where a person needs contentment or peace or quietness, the person needs kindness, a person needs compassion, a person needs to be able to slow down, something simple, where a person needs what is truly value, to be able to see through their own negative reaction. How about that for something valuable? In that moment where the person needs what is valuable, they don't have it. You don't have what is truly valuable. You have an arrangement with life that has made you a victim of what is valueless. And how many times do we have to meet the moments in our lives where the great shock comes? And by the way, and this is exactly what we have to understand, because of the coin we value, we don't value the shocks that show us they're valueless.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
I'll say it again. Because of the coin we value, we do not value those moments where suddenly we see that what we have is without value. Because the coin that we have been working for is the coin of getting people to believe in us. is the coin of pursuing positions and powers that lend a sense of strength and knowledge and power to us. These are the coins that we have set out to earn, so that everywhere we go, we can be with people who of similar minds have earned the same kind of coin, and then we can sit and exchange coins with one another, all in the great comfort of believing that that which we have sold our life to earn actually has value beyond those relationships of pretense that keep in place the lie. And it's profound. It's profound because human beings are slapped in the face almost every day. But they're not slapped in the face by a rude person or an unwanted moment. What we're slapped in the face by is where we have sold ourselves for that which gives us no safety, for that which gives us no protection, which doesn't allow us kindness, which turns us into self-centered human beings who pursue yet more of the same coin in an effort to protect ourselves from what the same coin was powerless to do the moment before. And that's what happens every single day. And that's what we look out at the world and see. And that's what we have to see in ourselves. How many of you have had some kind of shock of any kind at all in the last day? I mean, if you examine it, you can wake up in the morning and you can hate the day before it begins. How can a person hate the day before it begins? I'll tell you why. Because they begin to recognize that the coin that they have sold themselves for is as worthless as what they're about to do that day to earn it again. Put up with her lies, put up with his blathering, put up with those people's power pushing, put up whatever it is, so that we can remain living as we have been living with the pretense that somehow or other what we've gotten ourselves into is one day going to have the big payoff. And I guess what I'm asking you to see is that we get the payoff every day. We get the payoff every day. Every time we lose our temper, every time we feel afraid, every time we worry about the future, every time we blame someone, every time a complaint passes through our mind, every time we suddenly sink into deep doubt simply because of what someone said or didn't say, every one of those moments is a perfect instance in which we have received the proper, if you want to know the truth, we've received the proper mercy in that moment for payment that we've taken as being proper to us. Because it is an act of mercy on the part of life to show a person that they've been working for that which doesn't have value. But we don't see it as an act of mercy. We see it as something as cruel. We see it people and places around us as being unconscionable that they could speak to us the way they do or behave towards us in any way other than what's fitting according to our best ideas. So what I'm setting up here is a story, and I have a long story to tell you, a detailed story. One in which we're going to look at what it is that takes place and how it's happened inside of us that our lives, day in and day out, are spent in pursuit of a coin that cannot bring anything to us other than what the mind imagines in possessing it, him, her, this or that. That in possessing that, we will be different. So take a deep breath, because we have a fascinating story. And remember that every story, all of the places and the people in them, and every relationship, is a direct reflection of the content of ourselves. And that's important to understand, that that names and things, all of them have significance. So here's our hero, and we're going to name him Jacob. And Jacob has been a dutiful man. He has lived as a man ought to in the eyes of the world. He's lived in the city. And he's worked in the city, and he spent his life in the city, going to the bars and going out with people and having the proper social relationships and forwarding at every moment the agenda that will allow him to earn more of what he'd been earning his whole life. And the reason he wanted to earn more, and it made perfect sense to Jacob, as it did to all of the people in that city, that it was by earning more that one was able to sensitize and save themselves, be saved from unhappiness. That's what one does. One gets people to see them the way they want to be seen. And how should I be seen other than an agreed upon cultural icon that as I pursue and achieve the possessions, I come into the powers that come with all of that. That's what Jacob did. And everyone in the city did just that. But the city that Jacob lived in, and please remember right now that you are Jacob and Jamomi or whatever the female part of Jacob would be. Jamomi. In the city where Jacob lived, there was a problem with the city. And the problem with the city is that it was on a great fault. And so that it didn't matter when no one knew it was coming all the time. Every comes great earthquakes. And when great earthquakes would come, all of the horrors of earthquakes would follow. The natural horrors of earthquake and the unnatural horrors of earthquakes. The natural horror is any loss of life. The unnatural horror is what people are turned into when earthquakes come. The looting, the fear, the doom and glooming, the rushing to grab some advantage over someone else because you can sell something. You name it, it's too much to go into. The horror of the life in the city of people who believe that what they earn through the coin that's collected there makes a difference in them. But that wasn't the only problem in the city. There wasn't just earthquakes. There were floods because it was on a river. And they put great dikes along trying to control the river, but you can't control a river. Everybody knows you can't control a river. Sometimes the thing swells. And then when it swells, it floods. And when it floods, there would go Jacob's beach home or riverside home or whatever it was. All the time, nightmares of one kind of another taking place. Now, just so you know, we're not talking about a place, a city that you don't know about. We're talking about your life. When the earthquake comes, when he doesn't agree, when she won't behave, when they won't give you what you want, when someone says the remark that stings you to the core of yourself and you know it's true and you don't know what else to do except blame them for their honesty, for not being sensitive to you. You fill in the blank. And one day Jacob is looking around and... I mean, he's managed well. He has a beautiful place to live. He's got a fine car. He's got all the stuff he possesses. And he looks around and he's tired of feeling as though he has nothing. Because he actually sees in instances where those kinds of events take place that the proof that nothing he has is of value is that he's reduced to a horrible, hateful, fearful, worried, stressed man who, by the way, can't do anything with anyone else around him except express those negative states. And so all he sees for all he's done is that he doesn't have anything real of value. And he starts to talk to some of his friends. He says, you know, Paul, Willie, Bob, hey, guys, do you feel like I do? I mean, what's the point of it? If the smallest thing, they can put the wrong cheese on my turkey sandwich and I can get upset. I mean, what is it? Could it be that we're made of a mistake? Don't sweat it, man. You just have to make enough money to hire a cook. Then they'll know exactly what you need and you won't have to go through things like that anymore. And everyone he spoke to had a rationale, had an explanation for why he really did have earned. He really had earned what was valuable and good, and they wanted him to stay in it. And of course they wanted him to stay in it, because if any one of them ever saw the truth of their situation and pulled the plug, then the rest would have to either choose to change or they themselves would have to further convince themselves that their coin had value. And so nobody did. But one day, Jacob he looked around and he couldn't stand it anymore.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
He in his heart of hearts knew, as I hope you know in your heart of hearts, that he was never meant to be reduced to a fearful man. That he was not made to resent people. That how could all those years of hard work for the coin that he had brought to himself, how could it all mean nothing when something as simple as the weather not being right for his outing or whatever, it's just you name what it is. And he thought to himself, that can't be right. And he began to search, and he found something interesting. And what he found was he heard that way down the river, near the beach, there was actually a place where there was a couple boats. And the boats were there for people who wanted to, just like the banner said when he got there, go to the New World. And the New World, it said right under the banner, was a place where no worries and you don't have to work anymore to be free of them. He thought, oh man, my search has paid off. And so he pulled out the coins, and they had brass coins and silver coins and gold coins. And he pulled out his coins. He said, how much? I don't care how much. And the man said, well, it's pretty much most what you got, but you'll be happy. Oh, fantastic. And he took the money and he got on the boat, and the boat sailed. And it was, by the way, let me tell you about the boat. It was a leaky boat. It was a dirty boat. And when he complained over the 3-day trip that it was a leaky, dirty boat, they said, don't complain, man. It's taking you someplace great. And when the boat finally docked after 3 days at sea, he got off, and there was a place he'd never seen before. Ah, the New World. And he left where he was, but he couldn't find any place to go to right away except for this long trail. And he walked this long trail, and wouldn't you know, 3 days later, the trail led back to the very city he'd left. He thought, what kind of deal is this? And then he had another terrible feeling come into him, one that he discounted immediately because he didn't want it to come into his mind. If I sailed 3 days and I went all the way where I went, and now I'm someplace I don't know, and I walk back to this side, that means I must be on an island. I mean, that must be all there is on this island, is this city and this boat that says it takes you someplace. So he thought, I'm going to go get my money back. And he goes back, and there's a new sign up there when he gets there. It says, a better world. He says, look, I paid money to go to this new world, and now you're saying there's a better world. Well, there is. He said, but how can I be sure? Would I lie to you, sir? He pays his money, gets on the boat again. This time it goes 3 days to sea, and he comes around, and he's in another city. And the dock right there, nice city. This is fantastic. He said, last the New World. But you know what? He's there for a month or two, maybe a year, maybe 5 years. Earthquakes, flooding, tidal waves, same exact conditions. And he thinks to himself, I want to find another world. And he goes down to the dock, and there's a boat. It takes him back. He gets off the boat on the other side of the island. He's right back to the city he left the first time. What I'm trying to say and show to you is that human beings, what they call finding another world, always is connected with paying what they've earned, paying with what they have earned, to arrive at some place that they're promised would be different, meaning their mind tells them that when they get this, that, do this, the other, that they will be a different human being. And all we do is move from one opposite to another, never recognizing that we've gone nowhere. But our hero, Jacob, he begins to feel a paradoxical state inside of himself, meaning something's taking place inside of him. He at once is filled with dread because the actual condition of himself and where he lives is becoming conscious to him. He's actually seeing for the first time that he has never escaped the city to a new world, and that even in the city where he lives, when he comes up with a new plan, it's not really something new that's going to happen to him. It's just another way for him to use the coin that he's earned to earn more coins in a different place so he can feel different momentarily. And that dread comes in at the same time a whole other kind of resolve sets in. So it's a strange paradox, but it's true. This dread rises up in him, but another kind of resolve. And he begins to ask new questions. And when he asks enough people, and it takes time, he hears that everything that he'd been through, other people already knew about. That he, in essence, had gone through things that he'd recognized he wouldn't have been able to escape, but that thing was very well known about that ship that just goes from one side of the island to the other. But when he learns about this, he also learns from a friend, a man that he meets, that there actually is a ship. And that the ship actually goes to a new world. And Jacob wants to know how the man himself knows. And he says, well, I can't give you any assurance. You yourself, sir, you are going to have to go find out whether or not it's true. But Jacob had already made up his mind, because when a person understands that they have been working for the wrong coin in the wrong place all this time, that what choice is there? And so he goes and he takes it. It's quite difficult just to find this boat. And when he gets to where the boat is, he's stunned because there's a line there of about 15 or 20 people, but he can see this magnificent boat, pure, bright, clean, massive sails, fabulous looking boat. And by the way, he sees the name of the boat is the Perseverance. And he thinks, oh, what a beautiful boat. And he actually has hope because he sees something like this. But as he's waiting in line, he hears people yelling, screaming actually. Ridiculous! And the person runs away. Another person says, who do you think you are? And leaves the line. Another person says, I'm going to talk to my legislator. And he leaves. And all these various people having very negative reactions. And when Jacob gets up to the front of the line, he says, those are pretty rude people, weren't they? And a rather common-looking purser standing behind a simple wooden-hewed bench says, yeah, they are. He said, but it's very commonplace here. And Jacob says, well, I don't know about them, but I can tell you for one, I'm very grateful to be here. Because I really want to leave this place. I really want to find a new world where human beings aren't always afraid and angry and nervous and hateful and all. I can't wait. And Jacob says, so how much is it? And the purser says, well, sir, it's 3 coins. And Jacob's mind, fast as a whip, thinks to himself, 3 coins, 3 coins, 3 coins. And he reaches in his bag of coins and he pulls out 3 brass coins. And he puts them on the table. And the purser says, I'm sorry, sir, but those coins won't pay for the trip. And Jacob says, all right, fine. And he pulls out 2 brass coins and 1 silver coin. This is humanity. The purser says, I'm sorry, sir. And Jacob starts to get irritated. Well, all right, here. And he gives him 3 silver coins. Persia says, I'm sorry, sir, that won't pay for the trip. Now, the worst thing that could possibly happen is he reaches in his purse and he pulls out 3 gold coins because he wants to take all the gold with him on the trip. And he puts the 3 coins down on the table and he says, there you go, my good man, there's your 3 coins. And the purser looks at him and he says, well, I'm sorry, sir. That won't buy your ticket. And Jacob, by the way, just bring you into the story. Jacob starts to get what? A little heated, huh? Starts to get angry. And he says, well, what do you mean? What kind of operation is this? And the purser says, look, sir, the captain of this ship doesn't accept that kind of coin. Well, what kind of coin does he accept? He said rather snidely. And the purser says, the captain accepts only the coin of the world that you're going to, not the coin of this world. And Jacob's about at the end of it. In fact, how many of you know at that point you would have already stormed away? But Jacob is doing the best he can. Now, this is critical because, see, it's the story I'm telling you. What coin does Jacob have in that moment? Do you understand the question? Meaning, what does he have of value in that moment? What he has of value to him is he's doing all that he can not to blow it. What's of value is to appear like he's a kind and generous person who belongs in the new world, and therefore he doesn't want to just shout at this guy and throttle him. So he says, all right, look, man, let me buy some coins from you then. Because that's the next option, isn't it? And the gentleman says, well, I'm sorry, sir, they're not for sale. What do you mean they're not for sale? We don't sell these coins. Well, great, then where do I get them? What do I do? How do I earn them? And the fellow says, where do I get them? And the purser says, well, sir, you have to earn them. And he says, well, how? How do I earn these coins? And the purser looks at him very kind. He says, well, that's not really my business. That's not my problem, is it? Don't you see? How? You tell me what I have to do. It's your responsibility, man. You tell me what I have to do to earn these coins. The gentleman just nicely says, look, that's really not my business, is it, sir? Nice as he can be. And the Jacob is actually losing his temper. And he said, well, at least let me see what the coins look like that you want so that I can get some. Whole attitude. And the purser pulls open a little bag and he lays out 5 or 6 coins on the table. And each of these small coins has a letter, a different letter. One has a P on it, one has a C, one has a K, one has an I. Different letters on the coin. A rather rudimentary looking coin. Almost looked like it was made of earth. That's how simple it was. And Jacob looks at these and says, that's it? He says, yeah, that's it. He says, I'll be right back.
Here, Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks 4 times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GuyFinley.org.
So Jacob goes back to the city, gets a newspaper, tries to find a place to buy these coins. Can't find a newspaper at all. Can't find any place to buy them. So he starts snooping around, and he finally runs into somebody who says he'll sell him the coins, but they're very expensive. And he sells him the coins. Now Peter's got the, Jacob's got the coins, and he goes back to the purser. He says, there you go. You said 3 coins? Here's 3 coins. The purser looks at the coins and says, sir, those are counterfeit coins. What do you mean they're counterfeit coins? He said, well, you know what counterfeit means, don't you? It means they're not the real deal. And he breaks one in half to show that they're not the real deal. Well, Jacob just goes ballistic. And he thinks to himself, what a stupid mistake he's made. How ridiculous that I even think about that. The ship is probably a phony baloney. He's a phony baloney. The whole thing's phony baloney. And he goes back to work in the city, meaning he turns his back on the sense that he had that he'd been working for the wrong coin, and he goes to make more coin for himself. But he can't get free of the knowledge that he's working for that which proves itself valueless. I want to get that in your mind. Finally, he decides he's got to find out something about this, and he begins an actual search. And his search, only because I only have 11 minutes left and I have so much to tell you, finally culminates in finding a man who actually has some of the coins that he's looking for. And he asks him, sir, where did you get these coins? He said, well, I earned them. And Jacob says, where did you earn them? He said, oh, that's no big deal. He said, if there's about, oh, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 miles outside of the city, there's a farm. And you work on that farm. And when you work on that farm, they pay you with these coins. Jacob says, that's it? You just go and work on the farm and they pay you with these coins? He said, yeah, that's basically it. Great, man. Let me go. And Jacob's off. Hikes down, gets to the farm, and it's a nice 50, 60 acre farm, and he can see spotted here and there certain people, and he goes up and he finds the man that's running the farm, and he says, look, I want to earn some coins that have letters on them, because I want to get to the new world. Man says, so that's great, you're welcome here. That's what this place is, it's a place to work and earn those coins. Jacob says, what do I have to do? He says, well, tomorrow morning when the cock crows, you'll have to get up and you'll be taken out to one of the fields where you're going to have to work. Work at what? Jacob said. Work. We till the fields. We sow the seed. We cultivate. We do the work that keeps this place going so that everyone here has food enough. We make our own clothing here. And basically we see that those who are around us who don't have enough, they have it too. And Jacob says, well, when do I get paid? The fellow says, well, you get paid at the end of each month, like everybody else. But the fellow said, you'll see that in the room that we're giving you, there's a small wooden chest, and the coin that we pay, we always put it in the wooden chest so we don't ever have to come and ask for it. When it's time to get paid, it'll be in the chest. Jacob says, that's great. First month goes by, it's hard work. There's nobody telling him he's nice. No one saying that he looks great, that he's doing a great job. Nothing, absolutely nothing except hard work. At the end of the month, he's thinking to himself, all right, I got the first coin. I can deal with this 3 months and I'm out of here. And he goes and he opens up the chest and there's no coin in it. Jacob's not happy. Jacob runs over to the fellow running the farm. He says, hey, 30 days, where's the coin? The fellow said, look, I said that we would pay you when we could. Sometimes we have coin to pay, sometimes we don't. We had to use everything this month for other people who needed other things, so there's no coin this month. What do you mean there's no coin this month? There's no coin this month. You agreed to work here for what we said the wages were. If you don't want the wages, sir, please leave. And I mean that. Please leave if you don't want the real coin. And Jacob knew he was serious. He said, all right, no big deal. And he spent another 30 days working. And again, no coin. And 30 days and 30 days and 30 days until finally something happened. And what happened was that Jacob, who first hated the fact that he was out there working for coin that he wasn't getting, or at least hadn't materialized, and it was hard work in those fields, he began to actually enjoy his work. He began to enjoy that life that wasn't the city life, that wasn't the pursuit, wasn't the planning, wasn't the possession, wasn't the whole idea of becoming something and having people notice. And he began to actually enjoy it. And about the fifth month, when he wasn't even thinking about it anymore, one day he remembered that he hadn't looked in the chest, and he went and opened up the chest, and there was a coin in it with a P. And he looked at the coin, that fit. Look, I got a coin. He thought to himself, strange, isn't it? I got a coin now. But he put the coin back in the chest. And this went on for another 3 years. And then at the end of those 3 years, one day Jacob opened up the chest and there were not three coins in it, but four coins. And he smiled to himself because something had happened to Jacob. And basically, let me tell you in a short manner now what happened. Jacob put the four coins in a purse and he walked down to the purser where the ship was. And he looked at the purser and he smiled, and the purser smiled at him, which he hadn't done before. And Jacob said, you know, I've worked hard, he said, but I've got these coins, and you know what? He said, I want you to give them to someone who needs them more than I do, because the truth is, I'm happy where I am now. I'm at peace where I'm working. I like my life. And the purser said, yeah, I know. And surprisingly, as Jacob looked at the purser, the old farmer that he was working for was standing behind the purser. Purser took the coins, gave them to the farmer. Farmer smiled. Jacob went back to the farm. And Jacob was sitting there and said, well, I'm not quite sure. What is all that about? And the purser said to him, look, sir, he said, now you already understand. You see that ship there? It doesn't go anywhere. It's just for show. Because people need to see something that looks like what they're looking for in order to earn the coin. He said, but the fact is, and you already know it, that what you have become now is the new world that you were looking for. There is no other journey. And there is no other coin to be paid in. But what are we talking about? Because we have to go through the last 5 minutes. How does one earn those coins that Jacob earned that led him to become a new man? And the answer is, because if we're interested, if we want to earn those coins, is we have to work in those in the fields. Where they're earned. That's where we have to work, in the fields where they're earned. And where are those fields? Where are those fields where those coins of real value are earned? And the answer is, they are wherever I am, where I'm willing to work for them. That's where they are. And I have, in the last minutes now, tell you about five fields in which a woman must learn to work if they want the coin that leads them to discover the new world. We have to work in the field of patience. We have to work in the field of patience. What does it mean to work in the field of patience? It means that an individual starts to recognize that they're rushing, their impatience, all that business of all that pressure all the time earns them the coin without value. Because that promises all the time to bring them to an end of that kind of pressure in themselves, and it never does because they become more attached and identified with those pursuits. So working in the field of patience means that a person begins to slow down. They begin to refuse to rush. They refuse those anxious answers and those quick solutions that self always provides. Why does that? What does that mean then? What does that mean to work in the field of self that way, in the field of patience? It means that I begin to bear inside of myself the old world, that nature that has been given to me and that is conditioned and compelled to pursue those old coins that pay nothing in the moment of need. We have to learn to work in the field of integrity. What does it mean to work in the field of integrity? It means that we must learn what it means. We must dare not to lie. Oh, do you lie? You smile at people that you wish would leave you alone. That's not working in the field of integrity. That's keeping the coin that you think is going to keep you safe. To work in the field of integrity means that you don't blame anymore. You don't complain when life brings you those shocks. You don't look around and try to figure out why that happened to you the way it did and what you didn't have that could have protected you from it. To work in the field of integrity means that in that moment that you won't compromise yourself to get more of the coin that brought that condition around in the first place. To work in the field of integrity, you must end self-compromise. We must work in the field of forgiveness. What does it mean to work in the field of forgiveness? It means that when you begin to identify with those thoughts and feelings that push up through the ground of that darkened mind so filled with resentment, that you actually recognize that those things that you're beginning to feel towards that person or that event, whatever it may be that you regret, that to identify with that is to receive the coin again, because the condition keeps coming back the way it does because you keep trying to change it with the ideas and the self that actually produces the experience with the pain in it. So you work in the field of forgiveness. You dare to bear the wounds you have without identifying with the solutions that that wounded nature gives you. We must work in the field of compassion. And for God's sake, not the compassion that your mind tells you is compassion. There is nothing compassionate about pleasing people. To work in the field of compassion means that you understand, not because you're thinking it, but because you're living it, that every human being that you look at is in exactly the same amount of pain that you're in, and trying to earn coins to escape it just as you've done your whole life. That's what compassion is. To see that this person, here's this person, and oh, they're, boy, look how brusque they are. Look how rude they are. To recognize in that moment that the pain you're feeling is not because that person is that way, but because that person is that way. That person is that way because of the coin that he or she has paid for and earned that didn't do anything. And you mustn't earn coin like that anymore. You have to be different. And lastly, we have to learn what it means to work in the field of considering others first. To work in what a hard field that is, how hot it is out there, where a person works by what? By refusing to go along with those surging self-centered feelings and thoughts. To work in the field of considering others first means that you understand that the real act of life has nothing to do with you insisting that people coddle you or comfort you or console you according to your idea, to your coin. Instead, you understand that it's better for you to give the, for you to work it in that moment of wanting to be understood, to give that self up and to be willing to understand the whole of the moment in which you're in. And then when you start to work in those fields, you begin to earn the coin that comes there. You begin to use your life for the purpose it was given to you, which is to earn those coins that give you the genuine qualities that God means a human being to have. And those qualities never betray the individual who works for them. Think about what we've said.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit GuyFinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polanski of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.